Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Welcome back to Remap Sports and Sports Adjacent Podcast that sets out to disprove the notion that people with lives dedicated to pixels jumping across the screen can't also unhealthily be interested in what nerds condescendingly refer to sports ball every Super Bowl. Rob, I start off every episode with a question. If the goddamn Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl during the worst year in the Mahomes era, what the hell is everyone else supposed to do for the next 10 years?
I'm pausing because I don't have a good answer. That is, you know, that was an alarming, if your hope, if you're starting to get a little bored of like Mahomes excellence and KC being reliably, also, it kind of feels like an NBA team in some ways from the standpoint of like, it feels like you could have written them off during the regular season. They don't have it this year. Oh, the switch flipped. And now for the like 6 weeks, it's going to matter. They're going to be the team to beat. But yeah, I think everyone is in a great deal of trouble because Mahomes appears to be able to make whatever work.
Well, the closest someone got to also losing to Patrick Mahomes this year is Giant Bomb's Jeff Grubb, who roots for, despairs for the Detroit Lions. Jeff, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This is fun. It is kind of, if Mahomes was, or if Tom Brady's not winning, now it's Mahomes, and that's just been the NFL. It's like, oh, the league with the most parity in the world always just comes down to one of two guys winning it.
Well, I'll say this though, it's way more fun when Mahomes is doing it. Like, I think you can't discount is like Mahomes and Andy Reid make for much more exciting, much more entertaining football than Brady and Bill Belichick. Like the whole like Bill Belichick, I'm going to take away the thing you're best at, and then the next thing you're good at. Like every coach does this, every team does this. But the sum of fact was Belichick was so good, his greatness was measured in how boring could the games be. and that is like how that, like, this is why nobody really loved that Patriots team, why it wasn't like, it didn't have the feel of a Jordan era, because everyone kind of felt like you can't keep playing like such uninspired football and winning. You can't really make that argument with Mahomes, right? And like, even the struggling season where maybe Andy Reid has to, you know, throttle back on some of the stuff he normally does, he still dials up enough magic that he's like fun to watch. But the big thing is the fact that like Mahomes will do whatever it takes and become a different, you know, a different sort of player depending on what is required of him.
Yep. I never doubted that Mahomes was going to win that Super Bowl. As soon as that was like, okay, that's the matchup, Patrick Mahomes is winning. And really felt that way throughout the playoffs. They didn't have the toughest run up to the playoffs. I mean, the Bills game was seems like that was definitely their biggest challenge. And that was one that could have easily gone the other way, obviously. But yeah, it, other than that, it's like, okay, yeah, they're just kind of getting the Super Bowl. So it felt like they were stumbling in some ways. Yet now, once it got started, it's just Patrick Mahomes doing his thing. And that's what I expected to happen did happen.
So now Brady wasn't always deeply unlikable. There was a moment. I don't know if it was a moment or an era or just people get tired of a team. When, like, but is if Mahomes now what three Super Bowl wins, four appearances in 5 years, is like, can he, was Jordan, was Jordan disliked? Did people hate Jordan? I was in Chicago. Like, I can't be a judge of Michael Jordan. But it's like, no, everyone loved Michael Jordan. Did everyone not like Michael Jordan? He was very popular, but like, can Mahomes follow the Jordan trajectory where you kind of, which I guess is maybe the closer contemporary for Mahomes is Steph Curry, right? Where like, you can have a dynasty level success that is sustained and everyone still thinks you're funny and likable and relatable, despite the fact that you are, well, you're not relatable, but you might be funny and likable.
Yeah, Jordan was always likable, even outside of this. Like, I remember being a kid and everyone just kind of around me being like, man, I just wish he played for my team. I think a big part of that is like the NBA at that time was coming out of a time when it was very competitive and anyone really felt they could have won as long as you were willing to get in there and play physical. And so I think we just assumed like what Jordan is doing is so far above and beyond what everyone else has done. That's why this really feels magical. And what we're witnessing is magical. And most people, I think, really appreciated that. It's like in hindsight here a little bit, it feels a little bit different with where it's like the league was changing at that time. And some of those superstars that like defined the era before that were aging and they didn't get necessarily replaced all that quickly. But as at that time, it really just felt like, oh, Jordan magic. And Mahomes is like, no one's going to be a Jordan ever again. The way we consume the media in sports is just so different that it's even if you are a likable person, it's just you're not going to be able to replicate Jordan.
Well, and like Jordan in the modern media environment, people, it would have been better known like kind of what a miserable bastard he was to be on the team with. Mm-hmm. And like that just would have been part of the story. I don't know if he would have also been tweeting it out. It's so hard to imagine him being the age of Twitter.
Like a Durant, like
he would have been on McAfee every week for sure. Yeah,
or is he just like you know commenting on highlights of like blown plays and like just like dragging like adding BJ Armstrong about like this is why you don't get the ball more. I don't know if that would be part of his profile, but I think at the time like everyone just thought. His media persona, the Be Like Mike, the big happy Nike ad persona was kind of the man. Mahomes isn't a prick as far as anyone can tell. And it's funny, he's so not a prick that even when he is saying things that on paper feel like they are maybe the most like cruel, like knifings of teammates, he genuinely means them. When like a receiver drops a pass that like he should have had, and Mahomes is like, well, you know, it's kind of on me. I need to throw like easier balls. I need to make sure that's like more catchable. And everyone saw that it was like the most catchable ball possible. Like Mahomes is still like out there doing that. And genuinely, then he does. You observably see, oh, he is throwing differently now. He's not asking. He's asking his receivers to do even less and finding a way to like maintain his level of play while now like throwing them softballs. And that is a like that's not Jordan.
No. I don't think
Jordan's like Jordan's gonna scream you off the field.
Jordan's closer to Rodgers, right? In terms of personality and temperament. Like not necessarily the conspiracy theorist anti-vax.
Rodgers famously though, yeah, if you drop a pass, you're not gonna see a ball from Rodgers for a while.
Well, it's like I'm a hockey guy. It's like Connor McDavid right now is one of the best players in the world over in Edmonton. And he plays so fast that you actually watch and you're like, I don't think very many people can actually play with him on his team. Yeah. Like he's lucky he's got Leon Draisaitl and a few other guys that can actually keep up with him. Whereas like then you look over at Bedard in Chicago, mm-hmm. and you're like, anyone's going to be able to play with him. Anyone's going to be able to keep up, and he's going to make everyone else better. Now, I don't know if that's a conscious decision on Bedard's
behalf. Slow down.
Just slow down, right? But it's like, I think the great players are capable of like slowing down and doing things differently and getting their players that are alongside them to be even better. Mahomes, I think, you know, very, very good at that.
Well, before we get to the Super Bowl itself, Jeff, the reason we wanted to chat with you, something we've alluded to a couple of times when I've been on various Giant Bomb videos, is our shared despair for the NFC North teams.
Correct.
That we cheer for. And as bad it has been for the Bears at many points during my fandom, buddy, you got me beat. Like, I can't sit here and be like, wow, it sucks to be a Bears fan, because wow, it sucks worse. Or it has sucked worse to be a Lions fan. I have not had a parade for 0-16. Was it 16? It was 17 games now, right? And so it was 0-16.
Yeah, but then it was 0-16. Yes, it was 16 games. Yes.
Where do the Lions start with you? Because we talk a lot about on this show about kind of how it's the Bears sports for us is a lot of generationally passed on, like not something you picked. It's like family. It's just sort of this turd was at your doorstep and you learn and you learn to love it. As the decades go on. So where do the Lions enter your life?
Yeah, I am someone who was born in the suburbs of Detroit. I grew up a 24 mile for people from that area. They'll know what that means. And I, you know, my family, my parents were not necessarily from Michigan, but my dad was the kind of sports fan that would mostly adopt the team of the city he was in, especially for professional sports teams. He went to Miami of Ohio, but he would be like, we lived in Columbus. He's like, he's going to root for Ohio State and he's going to root for them big time. But I don't know, something about like being a kid in a sports city. I was like, these are my teams. And I just built up a really strong loyalty early on. And then it doesn't hurt that throughout my entire childhood, it is Barry Sanders, just watching Barry Sanders play and being in awe of everything he did. For me, that was like, oh, that's what football is supposed to be. So imagine my surprise when it's never been like that ever again. No one's ever played like Barry Sanders ever again. But at the time, it was like, okay, every time he gets the ball, it's going to be exciting. And sometimes he's going to lose 2 yards and he's going to lose 2 yards and he's going to lose 2 yards. And then he is going to make the jump off to the side and just burn everybody and do jukes you'll never, ever see again. And it was so mesmerizing that it's like, well, fan for life. And, you know, one of my earliest sports memories, God, I remember Mike Tyson losing to Buster Douglas. And then maybe like not long after that, like next earliest sports memory is the Detroit Lions losing to Washington in the first game of the season, having a great season, and then losing to Washington in the NFC Championship game. And it's like, okay, man, this is awesome. I'm on board. That's really tough. That was a tough team. They already lost to them. And then since then, it's been pretty much misery nonstop, including an 0-16 seasons that were pretty close to going 0-16 as well. There was like multiple of those after the 0-16 season. So it's been rough. But a part of me is like, this is what being a fan is about. Like, I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan. They had 25 years of making the playoffs straight. If I'm going to take that, I also need to take, well, I'm a Lions fan, so I'm not going to abandon them just because they're losing. And it feels like it's paid off. It feels like, hey, they found the promised land here a little bit. A big part of that for me is being a Lions fan. You guys will appreciate this as being NFC North team fans, hating the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm, and so beating the Green Bay Packers last season to keep them out of the playoffs was one of the greatest sports moments of my entire life.
You know what we didn't do? That. We had the exact same setup, script, ready to go. And I Rob and I even tried to delude ourselves that it was possible. Yeah. Like, oh, come on. Like, they're getting the Bears at the right time. Defense is coming on. If Justin Fields is ever going to justify being here another season, it's going to be this. And we didn't do any of that.
That's the history of the NFC North is Green Bay is actually going to win in the end. Green Bay is actually going to make the playoffs on its season where it's a transitional period and they're supposed to be reloading. Of course, they're going to make the playoffs. Of course they are. And that was good. That was the story last year as well. Aaron Rodgers is going to do it again. The Packers are going to do it again. They're going to, you know, treat the Lions as a red carpet. And so when we won that game, a lot of Green Bay Packers fans are like, you know, good job, little brother. And I'm like, yes, you're right. I am the little brother here. we beat you. This is more exciting to us than anything else. You're right. And I'm celebrating that. So being that kind of fan has been like, it has colored all the other stuff that's happened since then, of them having this really great season and getting into the playoffs and getting to the NFC Championship game. And then, you know, kind of dominating that game and then blowing it. And me being able to sit back and be like, that was great. That was awesome. And I kind of wouldn't change anything. Of course, I wish they would have won. But we get into that game, the NFC Championship game, where they did implode. They imploded for what I thought were mostly the right reasons. People want them to take the points. I get it. They changed the culture by saying, you know what, we're going to do things our way and we're going to be aggressive and we're going to go for it. And when is the right time to abandon that? Obviously, they missed that the right time. But I think I would have made all those same decisions. And I'm glad that they did. They're going to lose. I'm glad they lost that way. You know, the 49ers never looked that great. They kind of just got some bounces, some key plays, some key misses on defense from the Lions. And then you lose the game. It felt like, hey, that's football.
So I think one of the things that I am curious about, because, you know, with the Lions, it was such a deep hole they were in for so many years that, like, genuinely, it was a team you saw a couple times on the, you know, on the schedule, right, and you didn't think about them if you were a fan of another team too much. Whereas I'm intimately familiar with, like, the ups and downs of the Bears.
Right.
And one of the things that, like, Patrick and I talk a lot about is, and something I actually struggle with about, like, remaining a fan, is that even when the Bears are up, I never feel very good about the organization. Like, they feel so complacent, so quick to let themselves off the hook, so eager to be like, this is good enough. Like, why try to be better? Why aren't you happy with the product we're putting out there on the field? And I only started to be on the Lions bandwagon around the time that Hard Knocks came out a couple years ago, with the, you know, showcasing, you know, Dan Campbell, really, in a lot of ways. But I am curious, like, in that long period of them being kind of a shitty team, what was the story you told yourself about the team? Like, what explained it? And then, why, like, why was the team so bad for so long in your view? And why didn't that sort of discourage you from remaining a fan? Because for me, sometimes with the Bears, it's very close to being like,
sure,
I think I'm being held hostage by a family that doesn't know how to run a football team. Like, I'm rooting for like shitty managers, effectively. And I'm curious, like, what was going on in Detroit for 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It was a family that didn't know what they were doing. It's pretty much the same story. Misplaced loyalties to GMs like Matt Millen, people that were like, "Man, I believe in this guy, and we're going to give him a long rope." And him getting the longest rope possible as a GM, and seeing that crashing
around
every
the neck
year
of an entire city.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's that long, and it was. And so the story you tell yourself then, the story we all told ourselves throughout that time, is, well, maybe we can be loud enough to get them to fire Matt Millen. And clearly that was not working for a very long time, until that 0-16 season, I believe, which finally was able to it had to get so bad. We had to hit rock bottom for them to change. And we hit rock bottom and they did make a change. So it's like, okay, maybe there is still some sanity in all this. And then really, I think a lot of it comes down to when Sheila Ford Hamp, I think is her name, the new owner that took over from, you know, the new Ford family member that is now running the team. She seems to have a pretty decent head on her shoulders for this stuff. And bringing in Chris Spielman back first, I think he was just a counselor, advisor, and he was saying, okay, here's what you can do to guide this team. And Chris Spielman, legendary linebacker for the Lions, he's been around football ever since in a lot of ways. I think he coached some, like, there was like a women's flag football league. I think he coached that for a while. Like, he's just a cool dude about football. They brought him back in, and then it was like, we've spotted some guys in the league that know what they're doing. And when they started, like, bringing in Brad Holmes, it's like, okay, this feels like this could be something new. But before that, it was years and years and years of, we see what the problem is. The leadership of this team and the general manager really are pretty poor at spotting what this team needs and building from the inside out. They never built from the inside out. They got some really great talent here and there, but the offensive line and the defensive line were left to wither, and they always paid the price for that in the end. that is the exact opposite of what they're doing now. So it's like it is possible for it to happen. After 30 years of just abject failure, though, and really before, you know, for a very long time before that as well. But for the last 30 years, 32 years since the last time they won a playoff game, it was, you know, this is the one of the a couple of teams that have never been to the Super Bowl. It's they've never won an NFC championship or never won their conference championship game. And so maybe this is just our fate. Maybe this is our lot in life.
Hadn't won the division since it was the NFC North. I mean, that
right.
was a...
It never won the NFC North. Exactly.
That like, blew right past me. And so, like, yeah. Rob reminded me of it. I was like, no. Yep. No, like, no.
They
can't
the division
be.
Called NFC North.
They had
North.
That one playoff game where they lost to Seattle in the Stafford era. Oh, they were a wild card. Oh, yep. Fuck. Okay.
Yep. And it's like, you know, I mean... Stafford players like that helps like Megatron that's really what helps get through all that. Those periods is like, we usually do have really great players to watch. Matt Stafford, you talk about like not thinking about Detroit. Matt Stafford was a victim of that, a player that should have been considered among the elite in the NFL in a lot of ways. Yeah. And a lot of people do. But for the most part, he's overlooked in terms of his overall what he's put together and his ability to come from behind. When he won that Super Bowl, and a lot of people are like, man, the Rams, what are they going to do? They got this final drive. It's like, no, it's over. Matt Stafford's going to run it down the field and win this game. That's what he's always done. In Detroit, he's going to do it with the Rams. And of course, that's how it played out. And so being able to like, we have these players that are trying hard and really care. A player like Matthew Stafford really seemed like he cared. And so that helps anchor it. But clearly there's, you know, a lot of stuff rotten underneath all of that. And that was always difficult.
Do you feel weird about the William C. Ford patch on the uniform? Because yes. Like it's like, yeah, you know, this one's this is all for you, boss. But like it kind of seems like things started to turn around after he dies.
Yep.
And other people start steering the ship. And like you lucked into wonder of wonders, I guess you lucked into a good rich heir.
Yes.
Kind of seems like somehow. Seems like the vibe, like, oh my God, the princess has got game.
Yeah, like right. She at the very least listens to the people around her, which is not something you expect from an heiress. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a story of her being in the room when they're doing a draft and being like, don't you guys need a wide receiver? And then Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell being able to explain, no, we got this guy from USC, Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's later in there. We're going to get him. Don't worry about it. And her being like very tapped in, very understanding what they were saying. And then standing back once she like voiced her opinion as the owner of the team, like trusting these guys that she's put in charge and the people she's put in charge. God, I feel great about them. Brad Holmes, I'm a huge Brad Holmes fan, like as a GM. Like, I've never been a fan of a GM before. I guess Steve Eiserman, the Red Wings, but that's different. Here with Brad Holmes, it's like, this guy is just making moves. He had one of the best draft classes that kind of proved a lot of people wrong last year. Two potential Rookie of the Year candidates. And so that felt good. And then Dan Campbell is the exact right coach for this team. The culture needed to change and you needed someone that brings in when he's in the room, you want to adopt his culture. And so her being able to like spot these things and agree to them and make them happen, whether it's, you know, Chris Spielman helping her out or not, her being able to give the green light to it. Yeah. I feel much better about her than WCF and seeing that patch. I literally was thinking that in the last game, looking at that patch, I'm like, oh, we don't need that thing anymore. Or hopefully we won't have that going forward here pretty soon.
Well, I think that's what's fascinating about Campbell is he's a similar in stature, forward-facing personality to like a Mike Vrabel, right? Like these mm-hmm. sort of like big, yes. he's football guy. And Campbell has that speak, right? But what's, and you know, everyone remembers that, you know, biting kneecaps is like one of these yep. like early, like he had these really, like I drink two like extra large Dunkin' Donuts coffees, what, you know, all these little bits that were like, he was a caricature. And I think yep. that set an early tone that like, okay, maybe he's, like a funny meme, but does that mean he's a good coach? But like the difference that I've always appreciated about Campbell versus a Mike Vrabel, like who was the coach of the Titans before he was let go this past season. Not necessarily he's a bad coach, but like it's not like it's emotional meatheads. Like I don't know yeah. how to describe, but like Campbell cries. Like Campbell seems
constantly.
Like, yeah, like to a degree where it's like, hey, buddy, like,
you okay?
I love to, I'm in touch with my emotions, but like, yeah, like, hey, this is happening a lot. And I guess you'd rather have a guy a little in touch with that than not. But I think that must allow him. He's an enormous looking, intimidating guy, but is also in touch with emotions and probably connects with players in a way that is different than the Vrabels, the Belichicks of the world. Like, which I don't think it's shocking that those coaches are at least out for a cycle, because I think to a degree you have these generational shifts happening in approaches to coaching where you can't treat the players as though they're just laborers showing up to be on your football team. And I think Campbell really exemplifies the difference between your assumptions about a person based on how they look, because he looks like a football player, he looks like a football coach, but when he talks and the way he expresses emotions betrays your assumptions about his image.
Yeah, and like you say, you can't just treat them as laborers. You can't just treat them as millionaires either. I think these players want to believe in a team. They want to believe that they are a family. They want to believe that everything they're doing is to boost up the guy next to them. This is the kind of stuff that this warrior talk that is the underpinning, the sports psychology of a lot of team-based sports. And they want someone that understands that and preaches it to them, but also understands that doesn't feel like he's just extracting that juice out of them. No, you've been through it, and he empathizes with what you're going through, and you could see it because the emotions are right there on his face. They're always under the surface, and whenever he talks about you, he's about to cry because he loves you that much. It's like, okay, I mean, God, I think I will have to go out and fight for this guy, and that's why it's the coach that Detroit needed. Because it felt like before that, you bring in all these coordinators or whatever that...
Patricia exemplifies this, yes. Right? He's the, in many ways, cut from a similar mold of like what we would call these types of coaches, but is right. The exact type of coach that is now out of style and frankly out of touch. Now, granted,
it's the Belichick industrial complex. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Is the thing that is definitely out of. I mean, Josh McDaniels completely destroyed that, I think, in a lot of ways.
There's no Belichick coaching tree, as it turns out.
No, not
except for
really.
Vrabel. I think Vrabel comes out of the Belichick.
Yeah. How long was he in there, though?
I don't remember.
I feel like Vrabel was not someone who grew up in the I think the problem. I was thinking about this with Belichick a little bit. It's the, his success is partly that he has really good working relationships with his coaching staff, coordinators, but they never learn to do the job independently of him. And it's not useful to him to have them do the job. They're not complete coaches, right? They're they fit with him. It's like a puzzle piece, and they only become effective when they're working with Bill Belichick, because their deficiencies and their gaps are the places where he slots in, and together they're better. It is not there's no apprenticeship happening there. And I don't think it's for lack of trying. He tried to leverage Matt Patricia, into keep that guy relevant in the league. What happened in Philly might have put paid to it. Josh McDaniels kept getting shots because you'd go back to New England, and win. Wow, it's working. This guy's really figured it out, and it's just zero ability to lead a team. Dan Campbell's approach was so exciting for that reason. It was the ultimate especially because and Patrick, I think this is you and I have argued about this at times. In general, you're somebody who's I want an offensive minded head coach. I want the guy who can understand the offense, because you take away the genius OC, those guys tend to fall off the map. The team declines. That might happen.
I wanted them to Campbell fire our coach and take your offensive coach. Yeah.
But I do think there is. I tend to think that over the long haul, being an NFL head coach is such a weird job.
Yeah, it's a weird
that increasingly, over time, it becomes less and less about installing this or that offense, and it becomes much more about people managing,
it's vibes.
Identifying talent. Yeah. And Campbell, that season of Hard Knocks, it's I don't know, there's just something compelling about him. And, as if you listen to Bomani Jones' podcast, much at all, something else, he was sort of really quick to cotton on to back before anyone was optimistic about Campbell in Detroit. He noticed that Dan Campbell hired a very black coaching staff. And not just like at position coach positions, which is, you know, often where you find like a lot of ex-players, a lot of black ex-players, you know, senior leadership roles on the coaching staff. And that's something a lot of, you know, isn't super common at a lot of teams. So
they stuck with Aaron Glenn, too, when the defense was struggling. It's like, no, we're sticking with them. And that was the right call.
Yeah. You still feel that way, even because like the way the defense kind of came undone at the end of that season was like, boy, this is the sort of thing that starts to give you, you start to run out of runway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I do feel that way, mostly because the defense failed in the ways I expected them to fail much earlier. And it felt like they were kind of sticking together. And then they were doing a lot of bending and not breaking in the playoff games, where they would get down to the goal line. And then it's like, okay, now we have a contained area where the linebackers can actually get to the play pretty quickly. And the linebacker court is very strong. Obviously, the line is very strong. And they were keeping a lot of people out of the end zone in the red zone. And it's like, yeah, clearly the team gives up a huge chunks of yards on the pass. And that was a problem. But a bigger problem would be if they were giving up points and they just weren't. Obviously, again, that is something that was going to fail at a certain point. But, you know, that 49ers game is not indicative of
a ball doesn't bounce off a guy's helmet into his hands.
Not just any player. The player it bounced off was, I believe, a cornerback, Kendall Vildor. Do you want to know where one of his last stops was before Detroit?
Oh, please tell me.
It was the Bears.
Juice on you.
Yep. It was the Bears. Which, I mean, speaks to the weakness of the cornerback room of the Lions. Probably something they're going to have to shore up.
That is the biggest shortcoming by far. You know, we got Brian Branch at safety and stuff like that. So it's
CJ Gardner-Johnson got injured like early in the season.
Yes.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like very few teams do not feel like, man, our cornerback situation is not good, because it is such a hard position. This is why they're so highly paid.
Well, they're asked to do so much more than they have ever been asked to do before.
Like, there's only ever a handful of shutdown corners in the league. Yep. They're so good, you can't even target them. You can't fill the number one cornerback slot on every team with a shutdown guy. So you're already down to,
the new defense meta is just like, you need to be doing these reads every play, and you have one thing you have to do, and you have to do it perfectly, or else the whole defense falls apart. It's a lot of defenses are pulling that off, but it requires a lot of high level thinking and being very fast from these corners. And most of them are getting the hang of it, and it's showing off in that the defense has played very well this year. But yeah, it's a position that everyone wishes they had more depth at. But yeah, I mean, I think about that 49ers game, the bounce, obviously that was like a big turning point. But like, you know, it's, oh, Aiden Hutchinson has Brock Purdy in his hand right there. If he just gets the firm grip on that, the game's over. So it's like, I mean, it never should have got to the point where they were in a position to lose that game. But again, for me, I was watching like, this is football. This happens all the time. And I'm not, you know, too shocked. Obviously, not many teams come back from a 17 point deficit at the half in the championship game, but still, it's football, and I've seen it a million times.
I'll say this too. A lot of people tend to think, well, we'll get them next year, but football is hard. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no guarantee they'll be back at all. Like, windows open, they're open for a millisecond, they slam shut, unless you have someone like a Patrick Mahomes, right? Or a combo like Brady and Belichick. But I do think, you know, when the double doink happened, the traumatic Chicago sports event of my adult life, when that happened, I think something I didn't appreciate in retrospect was, one, because I was so high on the Bears after that season, that before the next season started, I went back and I watched a few of the Bears games that were still on my DVR from the previous year. I was like, yeah, time to get hype, time to get excited. And I was struck watching them in replay, where I was like, they didn't do a whole lot on offense. Like, boy, that, I remember this being a lot more exciting. This is like, ooh, that was another three and out, huh? That's not good. They're winning on lucky bounces a lot of times, or that defense is just like slowly choking the life out of another team until like eventually, you know, they get a score. But like the Bears under Nagy that year, when you start dug into it, they weren't that good a team. And then also they hadn't really ever been challenged as like that whole regime. It was their first year. It was like, holy shit, it's all breaking our way. I think what's funny, what I feel so good about with the Lions is that, you know, yeah, there's no guarantee me back next year.
Nope.
But they went through wild adversity in the early days of Dan Campbell. Like it felt like they were on track to another 0-16 season, his first season. And I remember, like, and I think this was the moment where I started to think, like, this guy might have something.
Oh, that first win.
That first, not just that first win, they'd had a number of heartbreaking losses where it was like, they shouldn't still be winless.
It was really, really close. Yeah.
And then, but they kept, like, it was like, they were good beats where it's like, damn, this team's really fighting like hell. And then that first win, and it was like, these guys, like, it's Band of Brothers in there.
Yes.
Like, it is complete, like, this team is hanging tough. And the next season was still, like, I think it was Hard Knocks off season.
Yes.
And the following season was still disappointing.
For the beginning of the season, yes.
And then they went on the run to damn near get in playoff contention. Uh-huh. And it was like, okay, like these guys are tough. Like at all the points where a team should break, they handled their business. They, you know, and that's sort of the thing that does kind of make me excited about this Lions team and also just engage with them. It's hard not to dig a team that is like, does not take any of this for granted, a fan base that doesn't take any of this for granted. I think it was charming how many people, I think, were deeply moved by the home wins in Detroit, seeing what it meant to that fan base.
Yep.
And it's hard not to be affected by this team that a lot of these coaches and a lot of these players have been through the dark night of the soul, you know, in previous seasons. They've taken really hard shots and come back stronger. And so, like, you know, I think if the Lions were the Bears, that playoff meltdown, I would have been like, well, and now the roller coaster descends back to hell.
Sure. Like,
Patrick, it's done. Let's check in on the Bears in 10 years and see what might be coming out of the smoldering rubble. Mm-hmm. But with the Lions, it kind of feels like they are one of the few teams that probably does have the resiliency not to get organizationally derailed by one half of really unlucky and really bad football.
Mm-hmm. It's and I think this does go back to the Dan Campbell being a vibes coach being so important. I do think a lot of it was illustrated in that first win where Jared Goff runs off the field and hugs Dan Campbell, and it's like, we did it. And it's like, you guys got one win. What are you doing? And it's like, no, I understood right away. Like, this is the beginning of what they've been working toward.
You're good enough for Detroit.
Yeah.
That line was like, oh, why am I tearing up in a Detroit Lions win speech?
and of course, I mean, you know, a lot of coaches know when the stuff like that's important to their quarterback and stuff like that. But you get the sense that Dan Campbell knows all up and down the lineup when a game is important for them. And like Josh Reynolds getting very involved in that Rams game and in the offensive game plan there, where it's like, oh, he was the other Ram that came to the Lions and is now trying to get a little bit of revenge as well. And it's like, okay, we're going to build some plays around that. Keeping the mood up of a team and saying, like, establishing an identity is, it does seem with the Lions, at least, I won't speak for the rest of the league. I don't know what's going to work for the rest of the league. It's the Lions needed an identity first, and then everything else could fall in place. Now, it helps to have what seems to be a very, very good offensive coordinator in Ben Johnson to keep, like, okay, to like back him up and like, okay, well, yeah, you get the vibes. I'll make sure that the offense is very innovative to the point where, you know, 49ers ran a couple of Lions plays in the Super Bowl. And it's like, okay, yeah, that is clearly something we needed, which is why I'm ecstatic he's coming back. that's what gives me, like, a lot of hope. It's like, okay, this combination of factors seems like this is going to keep this team in contention this season. And I agree. I feel different coming out of this season. There's a lot of problems with the defense, but let's go see what Brad Holmes is going to do in the draft. He got Brian Branch, he got Jamar Gibbs, he got and he got the tight end who was on my fantasy team. Now I can't remember. Sam Laporta. And it's like, man, the three rookies making a huge difference year one. I think that he could probably patch this up and have a team that is ready to go and will not be perfect still. But when they bend, they are ready to not break because of that culture. And it's like,
well, if there was ever a year for the team, I wouldn't be shocked if you were one of those teams that pulled off some big trade, because, like, this is the window, right? Like, this is the, like, Jared Goff's about to get real expensive, which changes like how you do roster construction. You have a bunch of really young players, but like it is these next, like it's next year and maybe the year after that you're sort of guaranteed, like this is an opportunity to step through that door. And I'll be curious to see how the team handles that and like how aggressive they end up being, because they've been like remarkably, other than like surprising people with the Jahmyr Gibbs draft choice, because the running theory is you don't take running backs early in the draft because you can find difference makers later on or even in just free agency. But I'll be curious if they make any sort of aggressive moves as a result, understanding that like, hey, like none of this is guaranteed, which actually was like remarkably refreshing from Campbell, like in that post game loss speech, to be not like a Debbie Downer, but like there's no one can say we're coming back here.
Right.
Like, because that's the speech you get. Because he knows. I believe in this team. Like, we'll run it back. Like, and you understand the mentality that comes from like trying to pull people out of the depths of not just a loss, but a collapse, right? A collapse has to feel fundamentally different than. Like there were moments in that 49ers game where Lions players were waving goodbye to the 49ers fans.
CJ
like,
Gardner-Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, look, like you got to have some swagger to win in sports. Like I don't knock like Gardner-Johnson for doing that. Like I had a money line bet on the Lions and I was feeling pretty damn good about that bet paying off at halftime. So I can understand having that swagger, but I also think it's an interesting approach to take of how do you talk to a team that is emotionally devastated is to treat them like adults to some degree. And it's almost kind of intuitive, but I feel like if they weren't as successful to this point, I don't know that I'd believe it. But because his approach has been successful to this point, I'm willing to look at this counterintuitive psychology as like maybe this is, I don't know if it works for every team, but there's a chance it works for this team as a motivator for how you come back from the brink.
I'm feeling very good about this season, and a lot of it comes down to stuff like that where it's like, okay, I think he knows when to say, these are professionals and they know what sport they're in. They know what this league is like, and there's no point in lying to them. So let's go in there, tell the truth, and then talk about what it's going to take to overcome that truth. I think that's what they needed. And I think him being able to identify that the right moment for that was immediately the second that the loss happened. A little bit inspiring. So yeah, I'm feeling good. I do have a question for you guys though. Bears. Okay, let's start here. I try to pay attention to the way a team needs to be structured, and I look around at the league recently, and it's like, man, a lot of quarterbacks, they get drafted, and then they get moved, and then they do pan out. And it seems like that could happen with Justin Fields, but I understand that he has to be traded, it seems like. But can you guys explain to me why that has to happen?
Well,
there's still two schools of thought on that.
Yeah. I would love to hear both then. Yeah.
The strongest argument is that they drafted him at the wrong time in their roster building process. Right. And funnily enough, like the Lions were criticized for a while. Like at some point you're going to jettison Goff. Right. And you're going to drop in a rookie quarterback into a good team. And instead they stuck with Goff. And that seems like that's going to pan out. Are there really that many better quarterbacks that you're going to get?
No.
Especially where you're picking in the draft and how much he fits the culture. But, you know, Fields like stuck with an old regime, like comes into a teardown team 3 years in. You've lost the competitive advantage from the rookie contract, or you're nearing the end of that. The Bears do seem to have a decent roster. Like they were on the upswing towards the end, especially on the defensive side. Do you project out that Justin Fields, given more time and now a brand new offensive coordinator, can make that sort of leap? You know, I think it's reasonable for the Bears to look at the inconsistency that we have had as an organization does not lend itself to putting Justin Fields like in that position all over again. And the advantages you get from resetting the clock on like just the contractual stuff, and the fact that it's the number one pick. If it was the number seven pick, if it was the number five pick, I think it's very easy to imagine being very excited about, or at least optimistic about Justin Fields being good enough to get that team to the playoffs next year. But it's the number one pick. Caleb Williams is, you know, seen as a like really high upside talent. I think the hand, like the Bears cards got forced by like the hand they have to play is with the Panthers sucked so hard that they couldn't find a way to justify keeping a Justin Fields, especially if, as rumors suggest, they'll at least be able to get a second round pick from a team like the Steelers. It's just hard. It's hard to run against that. And yet it sucks shit because he's super cool and like a really nice guy. And you hate to see him get like run through the Bears ragged this way. But I think he was just a victim of circumstance. I don't know what his ceiling is. I am a little pessimistic about how high that ceiling is, but I think his floor is higher than what where it ever was at the Bears. And I think the right team, like if he gets traded to the Steelers, I think they're in the playoffs. I think he looks really exciting.
I agree.
But also it becomes a very funny, the Steelers become a dumping ground for ex-Bears quarterbacks. Like they very publicly dropped Mitch Trubisky a couple of days before we recorded this and then might trade for Justin Fields. And so that is just a funny turn of events, but that's where I stand on it, Rob. I don't know where you differ.
I broadly agree with that. That is the assessment if you really like Justin Fields, and I do. And I would love for all of that to be true. I think the problem is there is enough like film on him at this point to suggest that this guy doesn't see the game fast enough. He does not react at the speed an NFL quarterback needs to react. With which an NFL quarterback needs to react. And I think for me, we talked about this on the show before, for a few weeks there, he was knocked out and a sort of a no-name quarterback. Is it Tyson Bagent?
Yeah.
Dude comes in, is notable. The background of that guy was his dad was like arm wrestling champion of the world. So this guy who, like, again, kind of a no name, no reason to expect much, didn't play at a super high level in college, comes in and one, he's visibly not a better quarterback than Fields. He lacks a lot of the physical abilities. He's just not the athlete. He's not the arm that Justin Fields is. But for a bit there, the offense looks better, and it looks better in ways that like plays just seem to get to the line faster. But the most important thing is like ball is snapped. And like before you can count two, ball is out. The decision has been made. Is the best decision? I don't know. But you see that, and it's like that's what an NFL quarterback has to do. When pressure comes, it can sometimes come so fast that you basically need to be able to like have your primary read and like make a call on it and move off it right away. But you've got 2 seconds to make that decision. You got to have an idea of what's going to happen at the line. And with Fields, you never get the sense that he fully does know. Or the sense I maybe get more often is he plays quarterback like he wants to find the most optimal play at any given time. He plays quarterback a bit like you're playing Madden back in the day, where it's like you're just watching like 4 different routes develop and which of these guys is going to get open so I can like throw the strike and pick up the most yardage. I don't want to leave yards on the table. But the game moves at such a speed that most of the time he does that, something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he's a good enough athlete that he, like a lot of times, oh, he's going to get pressured. Well, he'll get out of it and still like cause something to bust open. But sometimes that is how you end up with a 25-yard loss because he keeps getting out of it and falling back and eventually they get him. So with Fields, you just end up in this position of, I just don't like in my most pessimistic days, I'm just like, this guy's never going to have the ability to just see what is out there before the snap and then take it immediately. And if you can't do that, you're going to have problems. The arm strength, the accuracy, all that stuff has gotten better, I think, with Fields. But that ability to just like help yourself out and get the offense out of a jam when the pressure is coming, that hasn't been Fields.
How's C.J. Stroud doing what he's doing over that's I mean, I guess he's got a better offensive line. I think that probably helps. But him being rookie of the year as a quarterback and actually getting the playoffs and making it look easy, it feels like a once in a lifetime sort of QB situation.
This is something that Rob and I talked about as we watched the playoffs play out, and we were trying to sort through our feelings on where it is, where do you kind of settle with Fields as the Bears enter this really monumental offseason. Was watching a CJ Stroud. I was like, have you ever watched Fields these last 3 years and imagined he could do that? And you watch Mahomes, you watch Lamar Jackson, you watch Josh Allen. Like, I just can't. It doesn't mean I don't think like Fields can be successful. Like, there's his athletic, like sheer athletic ability could be harnessed by the right team, the right structure. To like, plenty of teams do not have the best quarterback. Jared Goff's not the best quarterback in the league. Like, it's about being used correctly. And I think something that two different organizational structures on the Bears struggled to do was to use Fields correctly. And I think if someone can tap into that raw athletic ability and a touch of the deep pass, and just realizing he cannot throw the quick game or over the middle is just not going to happen. You could tap into something. Is it long term? Is he like the guy for your team? Probably not. But I think with the right talent and the right structure, you could get something much more than the Bears have ever gotten on him. That said, part of this, like Jeff, is this ongoing anxiety complex that Bears fans have, which is, we're just a meat grinder for quarterbacks. Yep. And so when Mitch Trubisky left, who it's easy to say now, that guy always sucked. But the big fear was when he left after they didn't pick up his fifth year option and went somewhere else, like, oh, what's going to happen is what of course is going to happen is that, like, we just didn't know how to use this guy. He got disgusted with the team. He left and he's going to go do something great elsewhere. And well, it turns out he just sucks shit. And like, that might be the case with Fields as well. I think Fields has a higher floor than Trubisky ever did, but it's also entirely possible that Fields was just didn't make that leap. So many college players don't. Oh, yeah. Like, quarterback is incredibly difficult. And
15 guys in the world do that job well. Yeah, it's it. Yeah.
And for some, it just doesn't click. And the thing against Fields that they said coming out of college was he's a slow reader. Like, he doesn't read the field fast. And no evidence in the last 3 years has shown that has changed like all that much with Fields. But I don't know. Same with Trubisky. I was like, well, I think we ruined you. I hope you do something better elsewhere. Yep. And it didn't happen for him. I don't know if it'll happen for Fields, but on a personal level, I am rooting for him. I did want to bring in this. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, if Fields was the guy, how good would you guys be feeling about this draft coming up? Like,
well, first that's pick the thing. And, you'd be getting like two or three first round draft. I mean, you would be. That's the ultimate tragedy, right? Yep. If Fields was not even great, but like pretty good.
Right.
You would be setting your team theoretically up for like generationally for like a 10 years of like picking incredible talents in the first round, which you could whiff on. You could get those wrong. First round stuff can be a coin flip as well, but you'd be able to trade it for just an enormous haul.
A lot of value. Yep.
Instead, but at some point, like, it doesn't matter if you don't have the quarterback. Like, it literally, or you're operating a team on such a knife's edge. Like, what is the reason the Bills had a report come out where their head coach was like saying, if we acted more like 9/11 terrorists, like, I think we'd be a better football team. And they made it to
amongst us hasn't said that. I mean,
we all have got our motivational approaches, but like, how'd they get there? Well, Josh Allen dragged them there. You know what I mean? Like, that's ultimately, you know, what gets you or gives you the best chance. And if you don't have that, you're relying on roster construction that is just really difficult to do year over year. And so I'm of the mind that maybe Caleb Williams ain't it. Like, there's as good a chance that he isn't than he is, but I'd rather they give it another shot.
But at the very least, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think though also good coaches will know how to like let a player be themselves, and bad ones will be like, I need to coach your tendencies out of you. Yep. Oh, like something happened on the field I don't like. Better get rid of those instincts.
I do think that's what happened with Goff in LA. And I'm very critical of how Sean McVay did that. Looking back and seeing how Ben Johnson was like, I'm going to build an offense around what you can do. I think it makes what they did in LA with Goff look very bad. Like, that team looks pretty rough in that situation, I think.
Well, I think, like, Josh Allen, you know, before things turned around on him, he was a guy who made bad decisions sometimes with the ball and could be a little sloppy. That appears to still be kind of who he is, but the team kind of made a decision to be like, hey, just, you know, go out there and sling it. You know, hey, you see a lane, go on, take that ball. Don't slide. You're a big boy. You can take and just let him do his thing. And I feel like Fields, like the thing that's really damning is I feel like Fields, you could watch. Like, yes, there was always evidence he was a slow processor. But I think he got worse under coaching. And it felt like this dude is starting to overthink. And eventually he said so this year, where it's like, you know, I've got a lot of voices in my head, basically, about, you know, when it comes to what he's been told to do and, you know, trying to do too much back there. But I think a lot of that comes from, this is what happens when you have scrub tier coaches, which is what the Bears usually have to manage their quarterbacks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
At the very least, NFC North doesn't have Aaron Rodgers in it anymore.
That's
now,
true.
We have to deal with Jordan Love, of course, but...
Yeah, well, there might be a whole reason to be sad all over again. Speaking of being sad, Nick in Ann Arbor wrote in to questions at remapradio.com. Greetings, Lions and Bears. Oh, my. I'm a Metro Detroit native, and my father's been a lifelong Lions fan. I like them, but don't follow us religiously. I also got my success this year as a University of Michigan grad employee. I invited him to watch the NFC Championship together, but he wanted to watch it on his own to have, quote, no distractions. I called him excited at halftime, asking how he felt the Lions would likely be going to the Super Bowl. Foolish of me. He was happy, but said he hadn't talked to anyone else about it yet because he didn't want to jinx it. I proceeded to watch the rest of the game and dreaded calling him back. He forgave me in a couple of days. Do you guys have any game day superstitions or ritual sacrifices? Go Lions and Wolverines, Nick and Ann Arbor.
That's rough.
Did you do you have like any like Lions text chains? Like what was the vibes with like any other people that you knew as the roller coaster hit its peak and then was heading down?
I have a deep kinship with Nick's dad where I like watching things by myself without no distractions. That doesn't mean I don't get included on text chains. Uh-huh. I do. And it's, you know, it's my mom going, oh my God, don't they look so good? I'm like,
stop.
Yeah,
it.
Mom, let's just wait. Can we just wait? And it's not even like necessarily like superstition. I just a lot of times I'll be watching a game and people will be like, well, I'm just worried that this is happening. I'll be like, well, what the fuck are you going to do about it? Like, you can't do anything about it. So shut up. I just let me watch. And it's pretty toxic. So I try to just go be by myself and watch it on my own. So, yeah, I get it.
I remember I didn't realize just how awful my vibes were as a Chicago sports fan until the 2016 World Series. And I was in LA at the time. And my buddy that I grew up with lives out there. And so he and his wife were over at my place, and his wife doesn't give a shit about baseball. But she does like hosting parties. So she was like, you know, doing the whole, like, you boys have fun. I'm going to cater this whole thing. It's going to be fun. And it was fun. But at some point, she went over, she started doing exaggerated impressions of us as like, she'd wait till nothing was happening in the game. Then she'd react like, and like comically like pace around the room and run her hands through her hair. And, you know, she would sort of stomp over to the window and stare out at it for a second. And it made me realize, because like a lot of those are my mannerisms. Some of them were husbands, but made me realize like, oh my God. Like, we are just awful. Like, we do not appear to be having any kind of fun with mm-hmm. this. We're just miserable. And making sure everyone sees how, like, miserable and tightly wound we are. And I like to think I've gotten a little bit better about that. I think because I've gotten better about expecting less from the Bears in particular. Like, you know, I do not let my Sunday ride or die with that team. But, you know, I felt kind of bad this year. MK is originally from Michigan. And so we started catching more Lions games this year. And like during the playoff run, she sort of had this realization. She turned to me and was like, you know, I didn't realize that this team meant that much to me, but like, I care way more about this team than I ever have about the Bears. I'm sorry, hun, but like, I just like, this is, it turns out this is really hitting me differently. This is really like, this matters to me in a way that, that the Bears don't. And so she had a fun football season, but I also, then she let the Lions into her heart.
Yeah.
She'd sort of, you know, mentally gone back, return to Michigan. And she got a dose of that pure uncut Michigan.
Be careful. Tim doesn't mess around with that.
With that second half. Now, admittedly, from watching a lot of Bears games with me, she knew immediately that the vibe had shifted. Like, just immediately. Like, I forget what the first thing that happened. Was it the helmet catch?
It was not the first thing, but that was the first obvious sign to everybody. Like, at that point,
no, it was before that
knew.
Then it was like early in the second half.
There was a moment the vibe started I think the helmet catch is when, for me, I got a sinking feeling in my gut. I was like, oh, like, yeah, vibe, momentum, whatever you want to call it,
and they dropped it right before that, right?
Yeah,
that's what it was, I think.
Yeah. And we like, she just looked at me and was like, uh-oh, like, yep. What happened to those guys in the locker room? I was like, I don't know, this just happens.
Absolutely. And it's Michigan sports teams. They've been traveling well over the last couple of years. And obviously the Lions traveled very well this year. A lot of Michigan sports teams fans all around the country. And I don't know necessarily what that is. I suppose a little bit of is, you know, there isn't a lot else going on in the Detroit metro area. I mean, it's definitely better than it used to be. It's not like it was in like 2010. A lot of people would be like, oh, this wasteland, and it's not that anymore. But the sports teams are a common bond in a way that, like, you know, we vacationed to Chicago. You guys got a lot going on in Chicago. That's a fun city with like a lot of distractions. You know, like, I know the sports teams are important. There are ways to like look at other stuff that you can completely forget about those sports teams. I don't think the same thing is quite happening in Michigan. And so I think a lot of people carry a lot of fondness, even if it is a little bit buried and once teams start winning, it's very easy to get back on board, I think, for a lot of people. But I did buy into the America's team story with that team a lot. That seemed to be catching on. So, yeah.
Fuck the Cowboys.
It was a fun season. Yeah, oh, absolutely, without a doubt. You being at the party, though, Rob, do you guys see that trend on, like, YouTube Shorts and TikTok, where the partners of people who are sports fans will be watching them, and they'll have a bingo board, and they'll be like, what are we doing? It's like, and then they cross off the what are we doing thing in there, and then it's like, come on, guy! Like all these different, like, oh, no, he's pacing back and forth. All right, we're gonna cross mm-hmm. off pacing, and it's like every by the end of the game, every single square is filled in, and it's like there's 20 different videos of this of guys like doing this across the country. So yeah,
well, the The opposite of all of that is, I'm sure we've told this story on this podcast before, some version of it, but Rob and I, you know, extremely rare, despite how often we talk about the Bears, to watch a Bears game together. And there was one rare instance in which the two of us were in, he's already rubbing his temples. We were in New York together at one point at Vice, and there happened to be a, was it must have been a Thursday night game, right? Or was it a Sunday night game? One or the other, right?
It might have been Thursday.
It was a night game.
Might have been a Monday. Could have been a Monday.
It was either way. It was a night game. And, you know, we were trying to figure out some place to watch it. And there was a sports bar that was nearby. But then we got there.
No, it looked like a sports bar. But it's Williamsburg. So everything is the fraudulent version of what you think it is.
All the TVs were muted. And we, like, couldn't listen to the game. And then I remembered off the top of my head, I was like, oh, but there's an app that in theory is supposed to let you
right,
sync
you like point at the screen.
Yeah, and Rob did not believe me, and this shit worked like magic. We both put headphones in, and we were able to listen to the game and watch it. And the Bears were playing the Cowboys, and this is Trubisky just went off in this game, like just happened to have a great game. Threw like three big boy touchdowns. And you have to remember, it's otherwise sort of like a soccer bar, but it's quiet. None of the, it's not like a sports bar where like the sports are booming and lots of people are talking. It's basically quiet. And Rob and I are ordering these mystery beers. They just came in a paper bag and we wouldn't know what the beer was. I am just, at a certain point, I'm like three beers in. I'm like on the table, like an ape, just like, let's go. And Rob's just like, like a child, like, sit the fuck down. Like, what are you doing? He's like, Mitch. Like, now, granted, the place got kind of get into it at a certain point. Like, they were like, oh, we're so happy for these.
Like, by the second half, a lot of people had left, probably because it was unbearable now. But if you stayed, like, kind of the whole place got into it with us, like, kind of ironically, but like, all right, yeah, I guess we're all Bears fans tonight. And so they like turned on the sound, like most of the TVs were flipped to the Bear game, so we didn't have to wear our little earpieces, and like people watched the Bear game, and like people were congratulating us at the end. It was the middle of the one bright part of, I remember that being a lost season, that, you know, who knows which season it was, but it was, I think it was the playoff run hangover season, Patrick, is kind of my memory where it
yes,
was like
where they
despair had not set in.
Well, they famously, that was like, oh, that was like, maybe we're going to take the leap that, you know, Detroit made from year over year. And that was the season where they opened up the 100th year of the NFL, and it was Bears versus Packers, first game of the season. Matt Nagy dressed up as Papa Bear Hallis, like it was Halloween.
Jesus.
And they got their ass kicked by the I mean, I think this,
oh, it was just like a complete, like, 1 year earlier, it also been Bears Packers opener.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick and I were like, hey, Bears look good. They still lost. But it was like, it was expected to be a blowout, and the Bears almost won. And that whole game, Patrick and I have been like, I think it was where Patrick and I start becoming friends. I had no one else I could text to about the Bears. We just start working together. And so I was like, damn, the Bears are looking kind of good. And then a year later, same game, effectively, exact same night. And Patrick and I are texting like, hey, what's going on? And I remember Patrick like texting back, Mitch looks fucking worse.
Mm.
And it was true. Like, I didn't want to like admit it, but it was like one of those things.
The start of the season. Like, oh no.
Yeah. Like, oh shit. Like, what's the opposite of taking the leap, taking the plunge? It was just like this guy's actually sort of fallen off. So yeah. But ritual stuff, I think, has gotten burned out of me at this point.
Yeah,
like,
same.
Believe me, if I think you only develop rituals if your team has some reasonable record of success where the ritual helps you, like where it feels like using my psychic energy, something good happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the Bears will break you of any belief that your positive thoughts or anything you do, any ritual, is going to correlate with what happens on that field.
Well, we should probably talk about the Super Bowl at least a little bit.
Can we start with you guys? If the Lions were in it, do you guys think they would have won?
I think you would. No. Well, so the defense, right? Like, it was a defensive game. It was actually a pretty boring game for the first half. By our Super Bowl watch party was getting a little unruly because, like, not much.
You need to
was...
watch a better class of fan, my friend, because, like, I thought it was actually a really good game throughout. It was just low scoring. But yes. It was like these teams, like, it wasn't that the offenses were misfiring. It was just like
there was nothing for them to fire at.
Yeah. But
and there was, there was like lost fumbles. It's like they're driving. And it's like, oh my God, it blew up in their face. It's like, well, now they're screwed. And it's like, well, then now this offense has made a big blunder. And it was like, I don't know. It kept me on the edge of my seat. And, you know, by the end, I was like, okay, well, I do want things to ramp up. And guess what? Good news. It really, really, really did. So it's like, I don't know. I think we had the best sides of both coins there.
I think for me, like the reason, like the thing I fully converted to about Mahomes is like, I'm going to draw an analogy from my sport, F1. But there sometimes like there's questions about, like, oh, who's the absolute fastest, right? Like, who's the best? Like, you put a guy in a car, he's just going to, like, you know, absolutely be blazingly fast around the track. And then there are drivers that I think people tend to love a bit less, but they, like, drive to a target time. They're not going to go faster than they need. They're going to drive as slowly as they can and still win the race. Because the faster you go, the more risk you take, you know, the more stuff can happen. Mahomes is capable of just, like, he drives to a time. Like, he will, like, once, like, especially in this playoff run, once, like, I feel like with the Bills, once he got the points on the board he needed to, like, he got they scraped through the bare minimum points to get through that. I don't think it was, like, necessarily a marquee performance versus the Bills. I think it's going to be a particularly memorable one. But every time he touched the ball, they had a bit of a drive. There weren't, you know, like, this was the thing that the Bills were struggling to match. And if not for a fluke fumble and that weird fumble rule in the NFL, the Chiefs put it away with, time to spare with a touchdown. I think with the Super Bowl, I think one of the things that the offense wasn't working, the plays weren't going anywhere. And as we've seen a number of times this year, when that's happening, Mahomes turns into a running quarterback where he's just like, okay, I am just going to start gouging them now for 15, 20 yards a run because nobody's catching these passes. I see a lane, I'm gone. And then once he didn't have to do that anymore, once he sort of like trained the defense to like expect the run a bit more, suddenly he's throwing strikes. And so it's like, it's to me, it's just one of those things where he's going to do exactly what it takes. He's going to play the exact game that is required to break things in their favor. And then he's not going to push it. And I think in part because like he's got a weaker team. You know, I think he can't just like run people off the field, maybe like he was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, you're not scoring a touchdown in three plays. But like it's a credit to his development as a quarterback that he's willing, fine, I'll just take what's here. Okay. Like because one of the strategies around defense over the last 5 years, I think they call it like the cover two shell, is basically you're not going to throw it 40 yards anymore. Do you have the patience to throw it 5, 7, 8 into yards over and over again? And now, granted, Mahomes also had not a wide receiver that could basically catch a ball all season. But despite that, plus the change in sort of like the defensive meta, he just embraced it. Like this is a guy that it's actually kind of easy to forget. It used to be someone like, oh, he's got the ball. Like they've just, how long did it take for them to score? Like a minute. And now they're defined by excellent defense and like grueling 7, 8, 9 minute drives. And that's a testament to him having the patience to do what you need to do to win and yet be able to flip the switch. Those two, that overtime drive, that last drive in the fourth quarter, that's when he really took off and where it was like, fuck it. Like, I will just lay it all out on the table and do what I need to get to the end. And frankly, what I found most impressive was about the game was less Mahomes as much as Brock Purdy didn't lose that game. Every time the 49ers went off the field, they were winning. Like, you just unfortunately are playing against an era in which we have back-to-back players who just win. Like they find a way no matter what they are up against. If you give them an inch, they will squeeze themselves through. But I was remarkably I was really impressed by Brock Purdy. He is not like the most exciting player to watch, but he met the moment. He is not the reason that they lost. And I thought many instances got himself out of some incredible jams, given how good the Chiefs defense was. And like one of like the best like prop bets on the Super Bowl was Brock Purdy throwing an interception, because he's thrown a bunch of just easily interceptable balls that either have been caught or have just like been near misses. And so, of course, the Chiefs are going to get him at some point in the Super Bowl. And like he had like big high leverage moments, played really well. Like watching his parents up there, watching an a Mr. Irrelevant last pick in the draft, like not going to amount to anything. And he was like plays away from winning the Super Bowl. I thought that part of it was really cool, even if I feel bad for, you know, 49ers fans to some degree.
Yeah, there was times where he didn't look great, but you're right. He never was losing them the game. And you're right. His ability to escape some plays is and it's the thing that kept them in the Lions game. And it's the thing that really did keep them ahead for most of
them. He killed you with those. Like every time. Yes,
that was it. It was over once he started doing
that. You would have him like 3rd and 12. And it's like, all right, this, we're with the clamps down. And then he would get like 15 yards, which is what Mahomes does.
And it's not like he was escaping like schlubs. He's like, you know, Hutchinson is right on him, and he's going to recognize that and get out of that. That's not like luck. That's him knowing where the pressure's coming from, putting himself in a situation to escape. And that is something that the good quarterbacks in the league are doing right now and have been doing a lot of, and making that work in terms of, yeah, they're doing the reads. They're being, real QBs, real big boy QBs. But they have legs and they're using them. I mean, it's Josh Allen's success is that, obviously, Lamar Jackson. I think that Brock Purdy is not anywhere close to that level of quarterback, but he is someone that was able to emulate the things he needed to emulate to put the team in a position to win. I think, if the Lions were there, I think that they score a lot more than the 49ers did. And I think that Mahomes then scores a lot more, too. I do think it's that.
Anyone thinking if not for that blocked field goal? No, extra point. If that extra point is made, it ends in regulation, because Mahomes just takes he finds a way to score the touchdown.
Yeah.
Rather than setting up the field goal. I just fundamentally think the game just I need 4, I'm going to get 7. That's just how this is going to unfold. Because I think he measures risk that way. Right. Do I need to try to force this to the end zone? And that's kind of the difference is the way Detroit plays, they will go for the end zone as a matter of principle, I think in part because an act of culture building,
100%.
You're not losers. You need to act like you've got this.
Right.
And with Mahomes, because they've proven all that needs to be proved in KC, you know that going in overtime is not you're not going to lose in overtime. You're going to get them then. So go to overtime, higher percentage to win it there. Take the field goal right now. And I think that's kind of my view of how they play. Purdy's really interesting. I feel first of all, it's going to be it's a great story from the human interest standpoint of the dude in this draft position never amounts to anything, really. Certainly not a quarterback. And here he is now, having led a team to a conference championship and then now a Super Bowl. But I think the other weird thing is he ends up being this case study in how, again, just the weird mental qualities of being a great quarterback can transcend. Before a draft, it's all about look at this arm. Look at these legs. Look at these here. Look at the measurements of this guy. He's going to look at all the stuff he can do. Brock Purdy's a guy who has a great deal of poise. He does, for whatever reason, he seems sort of insensible to the moment, to the weight of the moment, in a way that a lot of guys are not. The other thing is that he's got a lot of nerve, and that doesn't get shaken when he makes mistakes. But the critical component is he's just good enough. There's a lot of quarterbacks who, if they have that X factor of not sweating their mistakes, of having that little bit of nerve, they're not good enough that that doesn't cause more problems than it solves. Purdy's just good enough that, like, him kind of being fearless and being like, I got this, remains a good thing. Even though he's not that great a quarterback in a lot of ways, you know, he just dials in the right amount of, you know, the right amount of YOLO, I suppose.
And it, like, a lot of leagues going to need to, like, look to that model where it's like, you're not going to be able to go out and get the quarterback every time. So can you make someone that has these set of attributes work for you? And if they think if you're a good team, and clearly the 49ers are a great football organization, Shanahan and who's their former player, GM, they have put together a team.
John
blanking
Lynch
on him. Yeah, John Lynch. Thank you. Yes. Like they go out and get the tools they need. They get Christian McCaffrey so that when you do have a new QB in there, they're like, well, listen, you've got some tools here that are going to be able to bail you out of a lot of situations. So what are you good at? Go out and do that. And it's going to be a model to look to. I think most teams will probably still fail to figure that out. What do you guys think about the free agency for QBs this season? You guys think Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield? Like, there's some names out there that people are going to go for. You think they're going to, like, a team like 49ers are going to stick with Purdy now, right? That there's no, like, he took him to the Super Bowl.
I don't think you'd have had to have, like, a catastrophic implosion, I think. Plus, the 49ers have just, they have a very expensive team. Like, they are going to have, their pivot point isn't this coming season. It's, I think, the season after, where they're going to have a bunch of players up that they're going to struggle to hold on to, right, as they're going to have to sign Purdy to, well, I don't think they can actually even sign Purdy to a contract yet. Like, in some ways, they'd probably wish they could, but I think they are not allowed to even begin contract negotiations with him until a year from now. But I think they kind of stand pat there, because I think they're paying him like $1 million a year or something absurd.
Absurd contract.
But yeah. Cousins, I expect him to go somewhere. I saw the Vikings already linked up with J.J. McCarthy, the University of Michigan quarterback that was just with Harbaugh. I expect Cousins to end up somewhere, but I don't know where. I'm trying to think of, like, who fits that Vikings-esque mold where you would just want to drop somebody in. I think some of that depends on if like, the Steelers don't go with Fields. I could certainly see Cousins, like, having a landing spot there, but he's expensive. Like, he is.
Yeah, he's
like,
yeah.
He knows he's good, and, or at least he's good enough, right? You give him the right team, like, he's not going to fuck it up for you,
right?
Even if he doesn't take you over the top. But I don't know who that team is. Baker Mayfield, I expect he'll just stay.
Yeah, I think he's going to
where
stay
he's at.
Ryan Tannehill will probably end up somewhere. I'm not sure, but yeah, we'll see.
But the other interesting thing about the Super Bowl that we got to test out for the first time was the new overtime rules, were implemented because of Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. Famously, a playoff game from a couple of years back in which the Chiefs and the Bills go to overtime. The Chiefs get the ball to start overtime, score a touchdown, game over. Josh Allen never gets to touch the ball, and everyone collectively agreed, well, that fucking sucked. Like, that's not how we want to feel. And so they've gotten something closer to college football. It's not exactly college football overtime rules, but it's more in that direction where you are guaranteed touching the ball in overtime. The way it's sort of set up is if whoever gets the ball first, if you score 3 points, the other team has to either match it or exceed it. So either score a field goal, score a touchdown. If you receive the ball first and you don't score any points, the other team, if they score anything, then they win. If both teams match 3-3 or 7-7, it's then sudden death and next score wins. There's actually been a decent amount of criticism of the 49ers who had an opportunity to receive or defer and chose to receive it. The idea being that, well, now you've just deferred to Mahomes and he knows that he has 4 downs, and that fundamentally changes your calculus on how you move down the field. That said, I saw someone, I think it was over at The Ringer, pinged like 20 different analytics departments and asked, what do your analytics show on what you should do in overtime? And it was split 50-50. So I think it's too early to know exactly what it all means, but I'm curious what the two of you thought of what I frankly thought was like a really, like, I love the new format. I think it was a great change to how the game plays in that situation.
It felt like football still in a way that college football does not. College football is still very exciting in overtime. You don't have to change it or anything, but I'm like, this isn't really football anymore. And then this is like, no, the football game's just continuing, which is kind of the way I always thought they should just settle. It's like, well, if it's tied and when the clock is over, it's just like, just keep playing. This is a kind of a good middle ground where it's like, well, then no, we want to make it fair, start a new game over, and here we go. It's like, okay, no, that totally works for me. And I thought it was pretty exciting. And it was the wrong decision to let Patrick Mahomes go after you. That's like, I letting your defense rest, all this stuff that doesn't matter. You really got to just think, what's the biggest factor here? It is, does Patrick Mahomes have the ball last potentially?
Right.
Then you can't do that.
Because if you get that ball second, you know what you have to do to win. Like when they get score a touchdown. You could go for two, and you could still, because that'll end it if you go for two.
There's teams against which, like, maybe that doesn't matter as much, but that's not, it's not the Chiefs. It's definitely not the Chiefs.
No, there are just certain quarterbacks where it's just like, man, don't do it. Don't give him an inch, because, he'll wedge it open. Rob, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I dig the format. Anything that you can do to make the overtime format still feel like a game, with the same dynamics of a game, I think is good. Like, the gold standard is playoff hockey rules. Sudden death, yes. We play as long as we have to. That is a generator of just like indelible like hockey memories. The low point, like the worst format, is like soccer going down to penalty kicks, where it's like, man, this is a great game we've all had, huh?
And
time to
Cup,
just
huh?
spin the wheel.
Yeah.
And it's just such a fucking bummer that, like, at no level, like, doesn't matter. Like, you would think maybe the World Cup deciding match, maybe we just don't do penalty kicks for that one.
Yeah.
No, we are going to stick by penalty kicks. It's so demoralizing. I think this format is all right. It's very funny how we got here, which is just that, like, everyone likes Josh Allen. When Josh Allen is good, he's so much fun to watch. I think maybe a little more fun than Mahomes in some ways, because there's a chaotic energy to Allen's game that, like, boy, I don't know what's going to happen. With Mahomes, you tend to know, like, something good is going to happen. With Allen, it's like he's gonna do some wild stuff at his best.
He's like a Brett Favre, but he didn't defraud Mississippi. That's the, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, wasn't...
Yeah.
Brett Favre managed to start a lot of games despite injuries, but, like... I don't think anybody's afraid to tackle Brett Favre.
No.
Josh Allen is like, man, they don't let you play fullback anymore? Nobody runs fullbacks anymore? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I guess I didn't throw the ball.
Throwing the ball, yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'll try this. I think it's funny how we got here, but I think it's a very good format. Really, really dig it. I will say, I think probably... I don't want to sell this part. I think the injuries to the Niners started to catch up.
That
with
Greenlaw
them.
One was fucking.
It was devastating.
Brutal. Just in the way it happened.
It had felt, I think, for previous games, even like they were hanging by a thread in terms of like just how many times did Deebo Samuel look not right during this playoff run?
Yeah,
where it's like, is Deebo going to be back in the game? I don't know. Like, and. Kept finding a way back in, but like there were the sheer number of guys who you suspected, like, I think I was playing hurt.
Kittle didn't do anything in the last two games and then leaves the Super Bowl with a shoulder injury. Yeah, not surprising. He hasn't caught anything in two whole games.
Yeah, and so I do think it's one of those things where by the end of that game, separate from the decision they make to receive, or whatever in overtime, I think they were a diminished team with each quarter after the half. And like by the time you're at overtime, they're compromised on both sides of the ball.
Well, and then it's just the ability for, a player like we alluded to this at the beginning, discussing the team and their ability to kind of switch it on in a most recently we've seen this in basketball, like the Golden State Warriors, right? It's more common in sports that go on for long periods of time, basketball especially, but like the Golden State Warriors at their heights would just kind of not really do much during the regular season because they were saving it for where it really mattered. And Travis Kelce, who was closer to the end than he is in the beginning, I think there was a lot of speculation, like certainly fueled by the Taylor Swift of it all, that like, oh, you know, is this it? Like, time comes for everybody, and maybe he stuck around for a season too long and he's just lost it. And then has he? Probably. But what he still has is an ability to just flip it on in a like Gronk like fashion. Like, it's the, you know, there's a reason they're going to go down as sort of like the all time tight ends for like this generation of football players. And that catch he gets at the end of the fourth quarter to set up that field goal where he doesn't just catch it, but gets like an extra 15 yards. And it's just where, what, how did you do that? And he is just, okay, like, I'm ready to get hit again. Like, in a way that he just was like unable, or the team was smart enough to understand. They don't do load. We don't call it load management in football, but it's fundamentally a similar concept of just understanding what your players are capable of and when you need them the most. And like, Kelce turned it on in the playoffs in a way that is clearly a deliberate choice. It's not like he forgot how to be an elite tight end. It's just picking your moments to really turn that on.
I also wonder if like, it's maybe harder to flip the switch than it used to be. Like, the meme that's going around of him screaming at Andy Reid.
Yeah.
After shoving him. When I saw that happen live, like, my immediate reaction was like, oh, he just had to get in that place. Like, and there's some guys who always, they play their whole careers in that zone of like, just like fever pitch, like tightly wound emotionally. But there's some guys who just like, you can't spend an entire game there. You can't spend an entire career there. And so you have to dial up that, like, you know, in a lot of ways, like anger, you know, just like fury to play a position well. And I saw that and I was like, okay, so Kelce's having to dig now. And I don't know if that's because like, it's harder to extract that performance from an aging, declining body in some ways, or if that's just an emotional lever he doesn't pull as much anymore. But like, my feeling watching it was like, he is like, part of his surge in these closing weeks has been like, it counts now in a way it didn't before. He could sort of sleepwalk through the season, it didn't matter as much.
Yep.
Now that it's, you know, do or die, you know, you don't see him smiling out there anymore. This isn't fun. He's angry whenever he feels like he's not doing something to contribute the team winning.
Yeah. You guys ever see For the Love of the Game, weird Kevin Costner perfect game baseball movie. It's a good movie. I like it quite a bit. It is at the end where he's just tired. He's like, engage the mechanism. And so something he does early in the game, and it's like all the crowd quiets and all just falls into place. And he gets tired and he's pitching a perfect game, and it doesn't work anymore. And I think that's kind of, you know, the quick and dirty metaphor for what happens to every player, especially at the end of the season. Everyone's injured. Everyone's tired. But I think you're right. Kelce was probably at a place earlier in his career where he would just bounce back. And that was something that he could engage on his own. And now in this moment, he's like, well, I need to bring this out from somewhere, and this is where I'm going to get it from. And clearly it worked.
Later in the game, he gets extra yards dragging, like, you know, five tacklers with him.
He had one catch in the first half for like 4 yards. He ended with a stat line of like 9 catches, 93 yards. And that is just, now granted, that's the offense and the Chiefs figuring it out to some degree, the 49ers having attrition on.
Well, he hadn't threatened to beat up Andy by that point. I think that's really
he's like, I'm going to come eat your nuggies.
Well, I can think of maybe perhaps no other place for us to wind this podcast down, wind down this NFL season.
That's where the writers told us to stop.
So exactly. It's true. The script writers that came in and said, this is it. Jeff, I know you're over at Giant Bomb, but what else do you got going on? Where do you want to point people to?
Yeah, I do a couple other podcasts. Game Mess is where you can find us on YouTube. Game Mess Decides and Last of the Nintendogs. Do that with Mike Minotti. I'm doing an episode tonight, actually, still, so you can catch that live. We'll be doing that 9 p.m. Eastern time. So there's also a Discord, GameMess.com. Should take you, actually, GameMess.net. That's right. That takes you to the Discord. Come hang out with us. We've got a lot of cool people in there. It's a good time. But other than that, no, just thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun.
No, this was great. We're glad to have another. I think we've had everyone but a Packers fan on, Rob. We have had a Vikings fan, Cat Bailey.
That's fine.
We've had Jeff Grubb on for a Lions fan.
What's Andrew Pfister doing these days?
Working for Nintendo, and I don't think coming on sports podcasts or video game websites. But I'll see what I can do. But. Thanks for, supporting everything we do over at remapradio.com. If you are a, backer over at remapradio.com, you're getting this early and without ads. If you're not, you're still getting it. You're just getting a little bit later. And also you have ads, but, you can fix that and support. Yes, Rob.
There's just one last thing I want to add before we end the episode, but finish the outro.
But yeah, if you want to support anything we're doing, please head over to remapradio.com so that, Rob and I can continue to justify talking about a very exciting Bears offseason as soon as humanly possible. Emergency pod for a Justin Fields trade.
So I just wanted to add one last thing. I know people were like dying to hear us talk about basketball because we're such experts of the game. but I did just want to call out, like, Patrick and I were both dismayed but not surprised that, like, well, actually, this part did surprise me that the Bulls have not done a trade at the trade deadline in like 3 years. Mm-hmm. The Bulls just don't, like, general managing. What's that? They don't do it. But Patrick,
well, neither
did you
do
know
the Pistons,
this?
Right? The Pistons are famously bad this season too, right?
Oh, the Pistons famously bad doesn't begin.
Historically, like,
you had to pay the ultimate price to get the Lions to have a decent season.
The Marianas Trench of like bad seasons. But Patrick,
yeah.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
The Bulls are setting attendance records this season. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. So if you're like, again, to that point about like through thick and thin, the nature of fandom, but sometimes it is our very loyalty that is why things will never get better.
It's true. But I gotta say, I went to a Bears and a Bulls game this season, and it's really fun to go to a Bulls game. Really fun in person. I went to a Bulls game by
Benny
myself.
Drives you home if you've had too much.
I went to a Bulls game with a friend, went to a Bears game with my child, and I showed my child videos of the Bulls game, and she said, can we do that next time? I was like, yeah, you're right. That's inside. There's a Benny the Bull. There's loud music. Cannon, there's a t-shirt cannon. They're dropping t-shirts from the ceiling. You're right. You might not be coming back to a Bears game until they build a stadium down the street from our house. That might be the next time my 7-year-old ends up at a Bears game. But that's gonna do it for us here at Sports. We'll be back sometime soon. The NFL is entering its kind of off-season period. The draft is happening in April.
What about spring football?
XFL, UFL.
Yeah.
The XFL's done now, right? Is it just the UFL now?
Merged. They merged.
Yeah, they came together, right? Yeah. USFL is, yeah.
Okay. Well, Rob, look, it doesn't take me very much. Like, we can do some preseason predictions of the UFL, man. And see.
Just going blind and like and like you have to place a bet. You're like like $25. You have to place a bet on it. Yeah,
look,
come on.
I may or may not have placed the play for these UFL games are to just bet the under, because the game,
oh,
like,
sure,
because the scores are so bad. And you might do it okay. But I've tried multiple years in a row. I get like halfway through a game and realize even I'm not. I'd rather watch a Bears highlight clips more than I want to keep watching. Like the UFL or the XFL. But this happens every year. I'm going to enter this period where it's not warm enough to go outside and I still want something put on the TV. And I'm going to end up watching shitty amateur reject football like I'm watching a pirated video stream.
Into the Alouettes. Are they the Calgary Alouettes or whoever, like the Canadian Football League?
Isn't that where we got our old coach, Rob? Or was that a different
one? Holy shit. Tressman was an Alouette coach. Yes.
Right.
Oh, man, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible. And on that note, thanks for listening. As always, fuck capitalism and bear down.